This is a provision if the GP were ever to be removed from a partnership or if the managing member were to be terminated, you may want to have something that kicks in that says if that happens, we want to be able to replace that person as partnership representative as well. Okay. So going forward a little bit, the other things you might want to see in your partnership agreement have to do with indemnification. Now, on the partnership representative side, you're going to be out there making decisions, taking actions on behalf of the partnership, much like a general partner or a managing member. And you often see indemnification provisions in the partnership agreement that's going to cover the general partner or a managing member for actions it takes on behalf of the partnership. You will want that same coverage as the partnership representative. You don't want to be sued by your partners or by the partners of the partnership for trying to do your job in an IRS audit. And if you know you do get sued, you want the partnership to indemnify you for that. Now, if you're the partners, I do see that provision commonly in the agreement. But if you're the partners, you want to pare that back a little bit, right? You might want to carve out gross negligence, willful misconduct, those sort of bad actions. If somebody's just not paying attention, not responding, you would want to be able to go after the partnership representative if that kind of thing happens. The other thing is the indemnification for the liability itself. Again, the partnership is going to pay the liability under the default rule, but how do the partners actually bear that liability? Now, you may have some strings attached to the partners through distribution provisions, and oftentimes you see partnership agreements say that any imputed underpayment that the partnership pays is going to offset distributions that are made to the partners, and that's the way they kind of require the partners to bear their share of it. Now, if there's no distributions that those partners are currently entitled to, you want to attach some other strings. You may treat it like a withholding tax. And a withholding tax is often treated perhaps as a loan to a partner, a loan that may bear interest. And so these are the types of provisions you may see in the partnership agreement that just kind of make sure the right partners are bearing the liability. And then, you know, with respect to former partners, again, they may not be around by the time the partnership gets audited and pays a liability. You want an indemnification provision that survives them ceasing being a partner so that you can collect that tax from them, even if they're no longer a partner, and you may not have all of the strings at your disposal like you would for current partners. Okay, a couple of other things that you might want to think about before the IRS comes knocking is, you know, do you even want to be subject to these rules? There is the ability for some partnerships to elect out. Now, it is limited to partners that have 100 or fewer eligible partners. Okay, and the definition of eligible partner is narrower than you think. And so a lot of partnerships are not eligible. But if you are, you may just decide we don't want to mess with these rules. We don't want a partnership representative. We don't want the partnership to satisfy these liabilities. And if you elect out, then you're kind of back to the old rules where the IRS has to audit each partner individually. Now, to be an eligible partner for the purposes of being eligible to elect out, you have to have 100 or fewer partners, and your partners have to be eligible partners, meaning they're either individuals, C corporations, S corporations, or estates. Okay, so if you have any type of entity other than a corporation, you won't be eligible, including a disregarded entity. So even a wholly owned LLC that's disregarded for all other federal income tax purposes would not be an eligible partner here. Okay, so this is where sometimes you may think about this in your transfer restriction provisions in your partnership agreements. You may want to disallow any transfers to a partner that would be an ineligible partner just to maintain your ability to elect out of these rules if you wanted to maintain that ability. And this is, by the way, an annual election that you make on the tax return for each year. So you may be eligible in 1 year and elect out in 1 year, and you may not be eligible in another year, and so you wouldn't elect out for that year. So what do you want to think about with whether you want to elect out or not, right? So it's the difference of do we want to be subject to kind of these more centralized, simple rules that may lead to inexact results, or do we want to be subject to these old rules where partners may have to deal with the IRS individually and go through the audit process? So it's, you know, whether the partners want to be audited directly, whether the partnership is willing to give that control up, because frankly, from the general partner or the partnership representative's perspective, it's nice to be able to handle all of that at the partnership level. It's simple and it's streamlined. And then you consider, you know, whether the IRS would audit and collect at the partner level. Again, that's a much more burdensome process for the IRS to go through. So do you want to make it easier or harder on the IRS, right? So, and just some statistics here at the bottom. Interesting, you know, looking at how many partnerships that are eligible have elected out, and it's an increasing percentage. In 2018, about 20% of eligible partnerships elected out of these rules. It went up to 25 in 2019, and a little more than 25 in 2020. So, you know, increasingly, you're seeing partnerships that can elect out. They do go ahead and elect out.